Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Welcome back to the 11 o'clock hour of Point Taken. Steve is back tomorrow, but it's Thursday. So that means Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee is here, and you have quite the laundry list of stories for us to talk about.
It's been quite the news week in Milwaukee, and things big and small, we have a lot to talk about.
So let's jump in. The traffic is coming.
The traffic is coming. If Tiff Pua's announcements about not many traffic issues were good for you, well, I have bad news for you. We had a very smart texter last week talk about this bomb is coming, and they were right. A lot of people knew it was coming. They didn't know how it would come, and it came this week. Interstate 94 construction is starting. Now, just to go backwards, what is this project? The stretch of highway between North 70th Street and North 16th Street, so between the state fairgrounds and the Marquette University campus. That road has been patched several times, but at its core, at its foundation, it is a 1960s roadway. And you can see that with left-hand exits in the stadium interchange and the frequent backups there. It's all getting replaced. Well, that work is finally starting. $1.74 billion.
Concrete is expensive.
Concrete is expensive. There's 43 bridges. At its peak, there's 178,000 daily cars that go through that stretch.
Okay.
And the stadium interchange is going to look nothing like it looks currently. I believe in the end it gets taller, but the key thing is it's all on the right-hand side, all the exits and on-ramps, and there'll be a diverging diamond through the middle of it, which is where you drive on the opposite side of the road.
Which will confuse everyone for at first, at least.
Probably. And that's the north-south component, the east-west component where you're driving straight through. It should actually be a lot simpler because there's not ramps on both sides of you. Similar to what happened with the Marquette interchange. But November 3rd is the date you want to mark on your calendar. If you're west of American Family Field, start looking for closures.
So how, because that's obviously, as someone who's lived in big cities, I always kind of smirk at the idea that, like, we don't have that. Our traffic's not that bad here. You go to Chicago, you go to L.A. There's places that have much worse consistent traffic all around the city. But if there is a place that has bad traffic, it is by the stadium. So how much worse is it going to be for the next couple years with closures? And how are they going to approach this to have, you know, the least amount of, what's the word that I want?
Disruption.
Disruption. Yeah, let's go with that.
So the project is divided into three. There's the west leg, which runs essentially from the cemeteries west of the stadium to North 70th Street. There's the stadium interchange in the middle, and then there's the eastern leg. The work will not be taking place simultaneously in all those areas. So if your commute is from, say, Bayview to Milwaukee's north side and you take Highway 175, and I may be describing my wife at the moment, until 2028 or 2029, she will never see construction because it's all going to be west of the stadium interchange.
Okay.
But if your commute is from end to end, from 16th Street to 70th Street, if you're coming from Waukesha and going to downtown Milwaukee, you're going to have some level of disruption for the next 8 years. Now, what that disruption actually is remains to be seen exactly. What's starting with is the Holly Road interchange is going to close. There are ramps at 68th Street that are going to close. And then there'll be one lane in each direction closed. And that work was described as Wisconsin Department of Transportation kind of put out this innocuous press release, and I was looking for it to come in part because of the texter last week that, oh, this $121 million project is starting in this little area. And I'm like, well, I know this is a much larger project. So if you look at it, it looks not like a major project because it's broken into so many little pieces, but it's going to last until 2033.
Good time to invest in those orange barrels.
Yes, the orange barrel. And lots of social media discussion on this after we published the article last night. One thing I'd like to address, the project includes widening the road from 6 lanes to 8 lanes. Even if they didn't widen the road, the construction timeline would be nearly similar, and it would still be $1 billion-plus project that would take years to complete and involve lots of disruption because it is just a really old road and really old bridges.
Got it. All right. When we come back, we're still going to be talking about driving, but this time we're going to be talking about reckless drivers getting their car impounded. I think this is a positive thing, but we'll talk more about it. He is Jeremy Janine. I am Kristen Bry, and this is Point Taken. Everybody wants to be closer to free. Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen Bry, talking to Jeremy Janine. And Milwaukee gets its wish. The city can now tow all reckless drivers. So tell us a little bit more about what was the rules in the past and what's going to happen going forward.
Yeah, the question is, how did we get here? And it seems like nationwide drivers just got a lot
worse.
You're more irresponsible, worse, starting just before the pandemic. There's pandemic is probably part of the reason why smartphone adoption, just general societal behavior trends, law enforcement maybe not as enforcing as much. We see big waves in how much Milwaukee can ticket. So Mayor Cavalier Johnson gets elected, or actually he became, because Tom Barrett resigned, he comes into office. He wasn't even elected at this point. And he declares reckless driving a public safety crisis as his first act in office. And he gets a state law change in 2022. And to set the stage, this is always hard for people to fathom, but if you got a reckless driving ticket before 2022, the police officer would hand you your citation and you were free to continue driving, which is really a wild thing to think about. Mm-hmm. That there was very little in the...
Because if you're drunk driving, you don't get to do that.
That is correct.
Right?
That's one of the few offenses that they actually, and they don't always even tow your car for drunk driving. They just make sure you don't drive it.
Yeah.
But there's very few offenses that end up in you being towed. So this has been a series of state law changes. 2022, the city could tow and impound meaning they possess them, they keep them at the tow lot. If they pulled you over for reckless driving and your vehicle was also unregistered. That didn't yield a ton of tows, about 600 over 3 years. In 2023, another state law change extended that to cases where the vehicle was registered, but the driver had unpaid citations and also owned the vehicle. So if you're driving your mom's car and you have an unpaid reckless driving citation, loophole, still can't tow you.
They're not going to tow your mom's car.
Yeah. So from 2023, when that was enacted, till 2025, early 2025, February, this is the most readily available stats I have, that 2023 change yielded 11 tows. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Which Scott Spiker said was somewhat useless, which probably understates the case. So finally, it's taken 2 years now, because in 2023, when this law was passed, common council members were already going, we don't think this is going to be enough. It's now taken 2 years. The law is now, if you get pulled over and issued a citation for reckless driving, which is defined in state law exactly what that is, the police can immediately tow your vehicle. And that could result in hundreds of tows starting likely in early November.
Because what is the state law? Did you know off the top of your head what the state law says that is considered reckless driving?
I don't want to opine, because I'm probably not going to. There's a speeding standard. There's a negligence standard. And again, okay, those are all defined. Speeding's obviously an obvious one, but negligence, that's defined. So that there's a pretty wide latitude. So you can still contest your citation, but the city has the authority now to tow your car. Other cities could jump on this authority too. But the Senate finally passed this. It's been waiting for them to pass it since April. They went more than 90 days without meeting. And the city is now, according to Lamont Westmoreland, the alderman who's been chomping at the bit to get this, is he wants to pass it as early as November 7th to get it enacted.
So is this just like a boon for towing companies then?
Probably. There's not political challenges. There's basic economic challenges that I fear are going to come up here.
Like what?
Current law, if your car gets towed for a parking ticket or anything, the city has, within 15 days, if you don't come pay to redeem it, they can scrap your car, or in 30 days, they can sell it. Now, I don't know that they necessarily, like, when the clock hits 15, I don't know that they do that necessarily, but they have the authority to.
Okay.
The new state law for reckless driving, they have to hold on to your car for 90 days. So all of a sudden, if you're towing hundreds of new vehicles that were never being towed before, the city might all of a sudden have an inventory problem where it's managing a parking lot. Now, it gets to charge those people $25 a day, but if they never come claim their car, this could be a public policy problem of the city might need to start buying land just to store cars that were driven recklessly.
Do you how long do you think it will take for it to impact driver behavior as far as, like, if I all of a sudden I know my car is going to get taken, I'm going to drive more safely?
Question I'm waiting to see answered is, what will the police department and elected officials do to make a show of this? Peter Knox, who runs the toll lot and is the city's parking services manager, told the media he's expecting an immediate influx.
This is legal now. So as of like today, if you were a reckless driver, or when is it going to?
So Governor Tony Evers has to sign it. He said he will. And then the Common Council has to pass an ordinance, and they intend to on November 7th. So
okay,
it could go into effect November 8th or 9th, depending on legal processes. I'm guessing there'll be another press conference or an announcement put out like, hey, we want to come tow your car. Don't give us the opportunity to. Because Assistant Chief Craig Sarnow said, yeah, the police department, we're ready to do this. There is that question of, well, if police officers are tied up waiting for tow trucks, that could become its own staffing challenge for the police department, but it's coming in early November.
What does the person do? Like, when if they're like, oh, we're taking your car, like, they just like catch the bus?
Walk, call a friend. Yeah, okay. That.
It's like, well, you're not our responsibility, but we are taking your car.
Yes, that.
All right.
Which is what happens in a handful of other circumstances. But yeah, that's going to be happening a lot more now.
Interesting. All right. Well, yeah, this is like my policy 101 class from college of like having to think about all the externalities that could happen once you put a new policy in place. And this one feels like there is a lot.
And the one thing I'm really watching closely is the police department has discretion. They can issue you a reckless driving citation, but not tow your car. And that was the addition of that discretion was key to get it through the state Senate. The Democrats were concerned that it was going to be abused otherwise. Now, what happens if all of a sudden the city has too many cars on hand? Does Mayor Cavalier Johnson talk to Police Chief Jeffrey Norman and go, let's dial back the towing? And do people learn that then? That, oh, well, they're not towing a lot of cars right now because there's this bottleneck, so I don't have to worry about it.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen Bry talking to Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee. And I feel like you should have made this the headline for this story. What you wrote me, habitual parking violators, the other kind of HPV.
So reading through the city documents, they refer to these people as HPV by shorthand over and over. And I'm like, HPV, they're like, here's an HPV map. And I'm like, no, that is something entirely different. Call the health department, not the public works department. We were talking about what I will call.
I mean, everyone has it now, right?
We're talking about habitual parking offenders, and those are people that have five or more unpaid parking tickets. So if you get your parking ticket and you pay it, that just means you're donating money to the city and you should learn the rules. These are people that accumulate the tickets, don't pay them. And the prior policy for the city, and there was, I forget the number now, it's a couple thousand of these people, several thousand, that if the city found you parked illegally after you had five unpaid tickets, then they would tow your car.
That happened to my friend. She's like, I don't know if my car got stolen or if it got towed.
Bingo. So this is where innovation director Jim Bull talked about building, quote, a better mouse trap, because they want to notice these people to say, hey, you have five unpaid parking tickets, and next time we find you parked illegally, we can tow your car. Now, for as little as $20 a month, you can get a payment plan, and you no longer have that risk. So that's coming. That's one of these steps. The other
seems like a good plan. Like, hey, we know. We're watching for you. But if you would like to pay, here's an opportunity to pay in installments.
Yes. So get more people on a payment plan. This was all inspired, and we'll talk about this conduit thing that's getting the city money as well. The city has something like $8 million in unpaid parking tickets that are tied to these habitual violators. So they can start narrowing that gap. And the problem is more than 15%, I think, is the estimate of these people live outside the city, so they might not be as incentivized. Mm. At the same time, if you rack up five parking tickets, you're probably still coming into the city a lot. So you might live in Brown Deer or Wauwatosa, not Fort Lauderdale or something, because you're probably never collecting from the Fort Lauderdale person.
Yeah.
So step one is mailing this letter, just trying to give a little nudge, a little awareness, so they don't encounter the situation where, was my car stolen or was it towed? Step two is when you go to get your car back at the tow lot, and we should have talked about this with
the reckless driving,
is you have to pay $150 for the tow and then a minimum of one day of storage, $25, just to get the car back. Well, then you're also going to have to either get on a payment plan and pay off the citations right away, or set up a municipal court appointment you can do community service instead of paying off your parking citations. And if you don't follow through on that, so you schedule the court date, you pay just the towing fee and you take your car. If you don't show up for that court date, then the city, not even if you're parked illegally, will just, anytime they see your car and you're still in the habitual offender status, they're just going to tow it. So you can be parked legally. You can be parked legally, clarification, on public property. So they're not going to come in your driveway and take your car. But if you're parked on the street in front of your house and you're just legally there, if you're a habitual parking offender that's failed to follow through on your court date, the city's going to come yank your car.
All right. So. This feels like a little bit more thought out than some of the reckless driving towing, as far as less unintended consequences.
I think so, that there is no fiscal note attached to this, because the city has no idea if this will yield them more revenue or less revenue based on people.
Are they going to lose money on the enforcement of this, of like sending notices out and
The cost of sending the notices is $30,000.
Okay.
It was the number that's sticking in my head. So I don't like that's a rounding error and all these other things. So the question then is how many people enter payment plans and then do their, because they're on payment plans, do they not accrue as many fees, like fines for being extra late? So there's lots of questions there.
How good is our technology when it comes to this? Like how much of this is like human manual work versus investing in systems that just can flag these things pretty well without humans?
If I'm a parking checker driving around?
Yeah, or just like being able to, you know, the automation that goes into signaling, like these are the people, this is where they live, this is what their card numbers is. Like it just seems like a lot of stuff that like technology could help with.
Yeah,
but so I don't know if we have invested in that good of technology. For,
I think more than a decade now, if you look at those parking checker Jeeps, you'll see all kinds of cameras because they actually read license plates and take photos right away.
Oh.
So they tell people. The other thing, I believe this to be true, I won't swear on my life, is that when you're driving around in a metered area, that it also flags for the driver that there's not as many meters paid in a certain direction. It can help guide them to go where there's probably violators. I don't confidently know that's true. I believe that technology at least is available in the vehicles.
All right. When we come back, what are we teasing?
We can
tubes?
Talk.
Tubes? Hidden tubes?
Let's talk about hidden tubes.
Hidden tubes will net the city $500,000 annually. What does that mean? We'll find out with Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee. I am Kristen Bry. Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen Bry, talking with Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee. Lots of things to still get to. What are hidden tubes?
Hidden tubes. The city of Milwaukee is going to get $500,000 annually thanks to a small procedural change it's making in how it collects rent from its conduit system.
Okay.
Which Tiff was just talking about during the news break about Marquette having fiber run between buildings. Well, the city of Milwaukee, going back decades before that, before there was even fiber optic cables, has connected all of its buildings, which includes schools and it includes just city as property everywhere. They're connected by, buried in the street, this conduit system. And that's really valuable if you're a Charter Communications, if you're, well, I was going to say Spectrum, but that's the same company now. All these other data providers that just need to lay cable somewhere, they don't have to dig up the street. They pay rent to co-locate alongside the city. The city is, since the 1990s, I think, or the early 2000s, has not increased the rent it charges. So it's boosting the rent price by 10%, indexing it to inflation. That's how you get your $500,000. The big thing, though, is there is something like $5 or $6 million in outstanding debt, which is why this drew attention, why, hey, this is something the Johnson administration needs to work on. Turns out $4.6 million is owed by Charter Communications. What happens is the city sends them a bill every year, and Charter Communications is the former Time Warner Spectrum. City sends them a bill every year for $760,000. They send back a check for $460,000, and it seems like no one had really tried to figure out
where the rest of the money is.
And the claim from the city officials, so on the side that's trying to collect the money, is Charter's referring to an old agreement. I did reach out to Charter and they said they're working on a fair resolution with the city, and they made it very clear, hey, we have been paying something.
Everything.
So they've accumulated this debt. A couple other companies have $100,000 here, $200,000 there. The big change is the city had no authority. This goes back to 1996 when this ordinance created this leasing scheme, that it had no authority to cut anyone off. Well, now if you have unpaid debt to the city and you try and get a new permit, no, you're not going to get it according to the proposed ordinance or now adopted ordinance. Also, the Commissioner of Public Works has the authority to disconnect you. So Gerald Krushke can walk into the basement and unplug phone service or internet service for half a Charter. I'm joking about that. But
well, no, because I guess it, like
he has the authority.
Doesn't this just screw over the regular people? Like if Charter's not doing their job and holding up their end of the bargain as far as paying the money that they're supposed to pay for rent from the money that they get from their customers, and then they were to pull the plug, doesn't that cut off internet for their customers who did their part by paying their bill?
Well, let me tell you what your alderman said, because Alex Brower quickly came to that same conclusion. Let me read his quote exactly. When a consumer owes these companies money, they'll cut them off right away. So it's good we're taking steps to do it right back to them.
Okay.
Now, Alex Brower is the guy who wants to
have a public option,
We Energies into a public utility and make other utilities publicly owned. So he's coming to it with that lens. But I think it's just a logical thing that the city collects the money it's owed. If it hasn't,
I totally think it should. Agreement. It's like it's a weird leverage point as far as how do you use the leverage that you have without hurting the people who are doing, holding up their end of the bargain.
Yeah. This is, we'll see what happens here. It's budgeted now $500,000 a year going forward and more additional revenue. There's already, I gave you the $460,000 from Spectrum or Charter. There's a base level of revenue there, additional $500,000 a year, which is not chump change in the city. That would pay for almost five police officers every year.
Yeah. All right.
Let's talk tiny homes for veterans real quick.
Tell me about that.
This project's been in the works since 2019 on 60th near Mill Road, so very far northwest side of the city. Former farm, never developed. This group out of Racine initially wanted to build tiny homes for veterans. The key kind of numbers to take away, across the United States every night, there's 30,000 veterans experiencing homelessness. That's estimated to be around 350 in Wisconsin. The initial Racine group couldn't get this project over the finish line, but a group that operates a similar facility in Kansas City and has one in South Dakota and now Colorado, they came in, Veterans Community Project. They celebrated a groundbreaking on Monday. They're moving forward with this project. It's $11 million. They're only about half the way there fundraising. The idea in using tiny homes instead of, why not an apartment building, is that it's hoping to build up a sense of independence in these people. They're only supposed to live there for a couple months. They're supposed to get some skills training while they're there. And they're kind of lifted into living on their own.
There's something similar in Green Bay, isn't there?
I think there's a plan to build a facility like this. I don't know if it's done.
Because I know this is a popular idea, but I feel like I often hear about them getting started and not how they're doing once they're up and running.
Yeah, there was we were talking about this in our office. There was this phase where it seemed like tiny homes were the answer to so many different solutions. And that kind of ebbed and flowed. But this is targeted at military veterans and their families. The units are like 300 square feet each. There's a slightly bigger one that can somehow accommodate up to five people. I assume they mean small children in there. Mm-hmm. I did have the chance to go in their demonstration unit, and it is really well designed. It seems like a well-operated company based on the experience in Kansas City. So it's coming. And I say company, it's a nonprofit that's doing this.
Well, I'm excited. I think I like the idea of tiny homes. We don't need more big houses. Okay. Anyways, let's take a break. We'll come back with more of Jeremy after this. All right, we're talking to Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee, and apparently Milwaukee has a huge fire truck problem.
It's a looming problem. It's only going to get worse at its current rate. It's going to get, it seems like, a lot worse. And what the problem is the age of the fire trucks. When you call 911, the fire truck that arrives is likely to be older and older and older because the city is not investing enough in replacing its fleet. Now, as the fire chief puts it, basically limping along right now. That his quote, and I'll read it here, is that fire trucks are being eaten up, fire trucks and engines, being eaten up, overused, and not replaced fast enough. There are standards by the National Fire Protection Association that all fire engines and fire trucks are supposed to be replaced every 15 years. If you do a complete rebuild, you can extend that life to 20 years as a reserve unit. The challenge in Milwaukee, and Chief Lipsky has come on this program, and I know talked about this, is they're in the field a lot. They're strained often because they don't have enough personnel. And so they're pulling these reserve units into service as well. So there's old fire trucks, fire engines being used. Fire truck is one that has a ladder, and engine is one that pumps the water. That's the slight distinction there.
Did not know that.
And I must admit, I have to Google it every time just to make sure I'm articulating it correctly. A fire truck is slightly more expensive. There is what's happening outside of the discussion at City Hall is there's what's being alleged to be collusion. There's now a lawsuit in the fire truck and engine industry, fire heavy apparatus, and that's actually some Wisconsin companies involved, that they're basically consolidating the market, raising prices. So a new fire truck costs about $2 million. A fire engine is about $1.3 million. The city has more than, I think, 45 of these pieces of heavy apparatus. It's budgeted to replace one of them this year. By 2027, more than half of its fleet, which includes its reserve units, will be more than that 15-year threshold old. So there just needs to be a resolution of, it's going to be expensive. The fire department asked for $14.8 million to get heading towards a standard of good repair, and they got about $2 million this year. So a big delta between what Chief Lipsky thought they needed, what they actually got. They're looking for $91 million over 10 years. The city has been averaging about $3.5 million a year for the past half decade. So there's this big delta, and it's only going to get bigger, and part of it's because the price of fire engines, fire trucks, continues to go up.
Are there any like grants we could apply for? Because that feels like I don't know where that money's going to come from.
So there's a little bit of reason to be optimistic, and that's the city is ending a tens of millions of dollars project to buy all new radios for police and fire. So it won't be borrowing new money for that anymore. So there'll be some borrowing capacity there. It's also ending what's called an ERP system, an enterprise resource planning, which I was in a port meeting this morning, and they're excited that it's going to allow them to bill people electronically instead of with paper invoices. So it seems like that was way overdue, probably 20 years ago. That was like a $40 million project. So there won't be new borrowing for those. There'll be capacity there. The challenges we've talked about, there's like a $700 million backlog in streets that are in poor condition. Now throw $91 million in fire trucks and fire engines on top of that. Like, there's a lot of needs, and the city could keep borrowing, but that's only going to make future budgets more difficult.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yes, hope for federal grants.
All right, let's do one more story before the next break. A new innovation district.
An innovation district centered on Walker's Point. And the question is, what is that? And at the moment, it's really just a label. But it's a
like a theater district where you're like, well, I guess the theater district is more than a label. There's a lot of theaters in the theater district.
And there's a lot of tech companies in Walker's Point, Harbor District, Walker Square, the corner of the Menominee Valley. You have Right Height, which does actually a fair amount of warehouse technology. You have like PKWare making Zip software. But the driver for this is Steve Glenn, who's, I must admit, has been a friend of mine for a very long time.
I'm friends with Steve. Great guy.
He took over the operation of Wantable Cafe, which is a tech company offering personalized online styling. He said, hey, Alderman Jose Perez, Common Council President, can we make an innovation district here? Can we try and recruit tech companies? Perez just pushed that through the Common Council unanimously. The goal is now actually teeth to it to make it, well, can we do less restrictive zoning here? Can we make permitting easier and do that in a targeted area that really encourages tech or innovation companies to come locate?
Great. That sounds great. All right. When we come back, Jeremy will still be here. I want to play an alternate Dodgers fan experience and the one that has gone viral that is negative. So we'll end the show with a more positive note that I think is more representative of Wisconsin sports fans. So stay with us to finish up the show on Point Taken. All right, Jeremy, Janine, you think we're going to win tonight?
I don't say we. I'm a detached sports fan.
Oh,
that
are
way.
You? Okay. But so you don't take it personally?
Definitely not. I'm
That's
rooting
probably a
for
healthier
the Brewers,
way to
though.
Be.
I don't know if it's healthier, but it is what I am.
Okay. I'm assuming that you saw the viral video that does not make Wisconsin sports fans or Brewers fans look very good.
I have not seen the video, but I've read the transcript of it.
Okay. So I wanted to, instead of giving that video any more light, play this other video. I think it was from Monday night, and it's a Dodgers fan who has a pretty big social media following. I feel like he's explaining a much more typical experience with Wisconsin sports fans. So I wanted to amplify this one instead of that other one.
It's Miller Park, and I'm going to tell you right now, Milwaukeeans are f-ing awesome people. The nicest people I think I've ever met. I had a guy give me a free 50-50 raffle ticket just because. Like, they want to make sure you come back and leave a good Google review from Milwaukee, and I respect that. I love that. This place is f-ing awesome. I gotta see more. And then my guy right here. Let's go, my dog. What's up? Go. This place is sick, dude. This place is sick. I just want to get drunk now. I heard you gotta get a Long Island iced tea. Hi, can I do a Long Island, please? Yes. Bro, I just walked by these
Wisconsin
fans. I walked by these amazing women. I just asked her, are those cheese curds? I never had one. She said, yeah, do you want one?
Yes.
I said, yeah. She gave me a cheese curd. It's the most delicious thing I've ever had in my life.
Go Brewers!
Okay, now we get away from each other. Good luck. I'll say that. Good luck. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much.
Everyone.
Yes.
There are my seats for the game. Wow. This is going to be awesome, bro.
So I feel like that is much more representative of how people feel like when they go to Packers games or Brewers games. So I wanted to amplify that a little bit because I do think that we are above average when it comes to being nice fans.
And I hope he got to drink. It sounds like he did, but I hope he got to drink more than just the Long Island iced tea while he was here.
Unless that's what he wanted. Unless he was just really going for it.
I guess I won't deprive
on a Monday
him of
night.
That. Yeah.
All right, what else do you have coming up this week, Jeremy?
We have a new port director, and someone has challenged me to say my headline on air, but it's from brownfields to blue waters. Benji Tim, who's the city's kind of expert on all things contaminated, has been nominated to lead Port Milwaukee.
Okay.
Right before I got over here, we'll stay on the port beat. I published a story about a new cruise ship coming to Milwaukee, brand new vessel, actually made in America, which is unique. It'll have all American cruise itineraries, which these other big cruise ships you see are foreign vessels, so they have to bounce between Canada and the United States.
Oh.
So this cruise ship is doing, and prepare yourself, it is doing a Lake Michigan Circle tour that starts in Milwaukee. Sounds great. Fantastic place to start. Goes to Sheboygan, first for a cruise destination there. Goes to Green Bay, Escanaba, Muskegon, and then back. So if you're looking for something entirely different, probably if you're not from the Midwest, there's a cruise for you.
All right. That sounds great. And is this part of, is this a brand new company too? So it's different than Viking and...
It's different than Viking. It's called American Cruise Lines, which they do a lot of Mississippi River cruises, and they do a couple East Coast cruises too. Their specialty is American vessels. They also operate Pearl Seas, which the Pearl Mist vessel has already been coming to Milwaukee.
Got it. All right. Well, as always, thank you so much for joining us, Jeremy. Steve will be back tomorrow. We'll be back to normal.